A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connections to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals and indeed aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. This episode of More Than a Lump is proudly supported by CarePlus Pharmacy. CarePlus is Ireland's leading pharmacy brand, offering expert advice and services for a healthy and happier you. Find your nearest CarePlus on careplus.ie or follow them on social media for daily health and wellness tips. Consistent and intensive breast cancer research is vital in changing the landscape of the disease. And last week, we were proud to sponsor the Breast Cancer Ireland Cancer Conference at the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, which saw a gathering of world-class specialist cancer researchers to share and collaborate on latest developments. Given this is the penultimate episode of our second season of More Than a Lump podcast, I've invited the co-chair of the conference, Scientific Director, Beaumont RCSI Cancer Centre, Professor Leona Young, to come into our studio today to share an update from the conference with our listeners. As we have done with many of our other guests, I also ask Leona about her own journey into this area of specialisation and reveal what inspires and motivates her and her team. Leona, you're very welcome to our More Than a Lump podcast. As you know, I've been keen to have you on for a while and can't believe we're nearly at the end of season two. You and I have worked together now for so many years, and I know firsthand how passionate you are about your work, having seen you and your wonderful team of researchers working away in the labs we fund through the generosity of our donors. And so I'm really delighted to have you here to share progress with our listeners. We have a very strong and loyal base, Leona, and I know that there is a huge interest in last week's conference. But before we get into the details, can you take a little step back and can we ask you about your own career path and what brought you to this field of research?
Thank you so much, Aisling. I suppose I started my undergraduate studies in Trinity College, where I did natural sciences, which I enjoyed tremendously, particularly neuroscience. And then I went off and did a PhD in pharmacology, which was also really exciting. And I did that in the Manor Hospital, so in UCD. Then I went abroad and did a postdoc and then came home to get a Newman Scholarship, which was in endocrinology. And this, I suppose, really started my lifelong obsession with steroids, how they work. And obviously that brought me on to steroid-driven cancer, such as breast cancer. So I took a job and started in the Conway Institute, so way back in 2001, further back than I care to think. And I started working with a lifelong colleague, Arnold Hill. So that's been both enjoyable, fruitful, and really meaningful. We started working with you really early on, Aisling. And I think the really nice thing about Breast Cancer Ireland was that it's very... very popular now to talk about patient involvement and their involvement in research. But you guys had partnered with your patients always. And from a very, very early time, we got to meet patients that we were really working for. They came into the lab and they told us their stories. And what we really gained from that experience and working with the patient ambassadors is where their real concerns were. And we found that it was really in the metastatic setting. So where the disease was more advanced. And that's where we focused our research. And then I suppose I brought my love of neuroscience and my love of working in metastatic cancer. And we really focused down on brain metastasis because it's such an extraordinary disease with such a terrible poor prognosis.
And I suppose for the listeners, tell me a little bit. I was really excited, you know, a couple of months back when you approached us and asked us to be involved and to help you with the conference that you were putting together, because this is an opportunity where you're bringing together the best in class, the best people who are working on such high level research into metastatic disease primarily, but in the whole area of breast cancer in general. And I think that's what is fantastic. Tell us a little bit of the takeouts from that conference. What's new and exciting?
Okay, there were several hot topics this year. So as you mentioned, I think all roads nearly lead to advanced disease. So obviously there's people who are passionate about early breast cancer, about prevention. But where the biology really becomes tremendously exciting and where we really feel as scientists that we can make an impact in terms of new targeted therapy really is in that advanced metastatic setting. So that's really what you heard an awful lot about talked about over the end of last week. So areas that really came up were really, again, in terms of brain metastasis and a good look at dormancy. So dormancy is that period that we call from when the patient is first diagnosed and that they have their initial treatment, be it surgery, targeted therapy. And then it looks like the patient may have, you know, a good period of disease-free time. Now, really good news is if you have triple negative breast cancer and you are disease-free for 5 years, you're considered cured. So that's one phenomenal piece of information. However, if you have estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, which is often considered less aggressive, you may suffer a disease recurrence 10, 15 or 20 years out. So why does this occur? Who are these patients and how can we treat them better? And how can we predict which of those patients may indeed have a recurrence so that women don't feel like they have this lifelong threat sitting on their shoulders? So there's been really, really amazing work done on this area of dormancy, why the cells go to sleep, where they go to sleep, and what eventually wakes them up. And can we predict that region of dormancy? Because it's going to be a really, really good place to target, to target to kill those.
And that's part of kind of, you know, all the clinical trials that we try to invest in. If we can come up with targeted therapy that can sort of block that progression.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we know that they're there. We know that they're hiding. And it's a really good place to get them and kill them off for good.
Yeah. Love that. Love that. Because I suppose ultimately, and, you know, you and I have had these conversations over the last number of years, is Breast Cancer Ireland's whole remit is to transform the disease through research like this into a, you know, into a disease that can be maintained long term. It's a chronic illness, but, you know, we will reduce fatalities completely. That's the ultimate end game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? To turn this into, you know,
a treatable illness.
Absolutely. And one not just that we can treat, but that we can treat compassionately so that the drugs are kind, that you're not just living with cancer, you're living well. You're living beyond it and that you have a good life. Another really exciting drug, and I want to tell you about this in particular, because this is pioneered by your old pal, Jeff Green.
From Chicago.
From Chicago. So Aisling and all the guys at Breast Cancer Ireland support Jeff's work and our shared work on brain metastasis. But Jeff, I didn't know if you knew this, first cloned the estrogen receptor.
Wow.
Yeah. So he is really rock star of...
And just explain that to our listeners who may not understand that terminology, cloning the estrogen receptor.
Okay. So we always talk about targeted therapies and how, you know, a good target makes a good therapy, makes a clean therapy and an effective therapy. Well, in breast cancer, all therapies lead back to the estrogen receptor. It is the king of targets. And it works so well because it stops the proliferation of the cells and it stops them going further and therefore being involved in a more advanced disease. So cloning the estrogen receptor is basically finding out all of the key components of the estrogen receptor and then making the crystal structure so you can look at the different pockets of the receptor and design effective drugs that will block it.
Wow.
It's so intricate, but it's so elegant. So he's been working on targeted therapies for the estrogen receptor for, oh my gosh, I don't know how many years, 20, 30 years. And we know now that the estrogen receptor can change after long exposure to treatment for it. So you know yourself, the traditional treatments for estrogen receptor positive disease would be tamoxifen and more later aromatase inhibitors. So some women, small percentage, most women do very well, small percentage of women will have disease recurrence. And what frequently happens is that the estrogen receptor itself becomes mutated. So it changes cleverly and then doesn't need estrogen anymore to activate it. And doesn't really care about tamoxifen or aromatase therapy inhibitors and can go on and do its job just fine. Well, Jeff has been looking at the steroid receptors and the changes that occur in them and has made a new drug called lasofoxifene. And
love
this,
the name. Never will remember it.
They never have short names, do they?
Lazo. We'll just call it Lazo because I'll never remember that name.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, wow.
So this drug is so cute because it works not only on the estrogen receptor, but it also works on these estrogen receptors that have become mutated.
Okay.
So it's going to be suitable for women with advanced cancer.
Wow.
And that's really nice. It's gone through trial called ELAINE, and now ELAINE 2 is out. So it's gone through safety and efficacy, and now also it's shown really good results. So ELAINE 2 was just presented there at ASCO recently, and the results were very exciting.
Wow, so, that's really good.
That, I think it's such, I don't know, it's such a really lovely example of somebody who's given his life
to
working, but had fruitful progression and started with something so basic and has now brought it full circle.
And it also, for me, gives me great happiness to see that, you know, we do invest in great projects. We invest in clinical trials, and that's the key. I mean, we've done, with your help, we have had huge successes in speeding up our scientific discovery output by all of the papers and the collaborations with our designated cancer hospitals, where we are churning out a lot of peer-reviewed publications. Like 10 years ago, we were lucky if we saw one peer-reviewed publication in about 18 or 24 months from each center of excellence. Now we are seeing like 10, 12 a year, which is fantastic. So tick box, we have speeded up the discovery part in the lab. However, the key now from Breast Cancer Ireland's point of view is we have to translate that lovely discovery into clinical trial and get the investment into clinical trials, get them across the line so we come up with better targeted therapies to treat more and more people.
So I think that that is one of our hugest goals.
Mm.
So, you know, we just established Beaumont-Tours CSI Cancer Centre.
Yep.
And our stated goal, my personal stated goal, is that we will increase our current output, which is approximately having 5% of our patient population on clinical trial. Now, I know that that sounds super low, but if you think about it, so many patients aren't suitable for clinical trials. So many trials aren't suitable for the patients, or they're not open in the area. But our goal is to have 10% of patients on clinical trial within the next 5 years.
Great.
And I think that this is a realistic goal. But I think that the sweet spot that isn't really been focused on, and what is going to enhance not just clinical trials, but new innovations in clinical trials to make, like Jeff's observations, like Jeff's clinical trial, a significant leap and not just small incremental changes, is that bridge from the translation into the clinic. And to do that, we need to fund observational and translational trials so that we can then promote investigator-initiated trials and have those really, truly unique observations and targeted therapies that will make that difference.
Yeah, and I agree. And, you know, even in talking to Professor Adrienne Lee and Steffi from the lab in UPMC last week, like, they are so passionate about, again, this whole area of metastatic disease, and also the importance of having and being given the right to choose the best staff to come on board and work in their labs and, you know, instigate great trials and, you know, produce fantastic results, which is what it's all about. But that's where investment, oftentimes, I think with donors, they don't realize that that's the really important piece. We need to get that funding. We need to invest, continue to invest. It's like, you know, we've been told in the past, you know, we had a global pandemic. We all, the world rallied. We got a vaccine for COVID, many of them. But we could do the same really in this whole breast cancer world.
And I think the world has taken up that challenge, Aisling. I think we're all working towards it. If you look at the EU and their cancer mission, that is now, that is continuing with you guys and your work in Breast Cancer Ireland, that there is a feeling that we, exactly what you said, that we achieved so much with COVID under such a short time, that now if we just pick up the baton for cancer, that we can make it. And, you know, in America, the US president there has called cancer out as one of his key things that he needs to achieve. I think that there is a feeling that this is now our time, that we can do it. But it's going to take smart collaborations between scientists and clinicians. It's going to take funding, but it's going to take a mind shift in terms of clinical trials, that patients need to ask their doctors, their GPs about clinical trials. It needs to be a ground movement, which I think is really important. I think we need to provide the clinical trials that our patients are interested in and in areas where that they're worried about, particularly in advanced disease. Mm-hmm. And we cannot ignore the worst of the advanced diseases, which is breast cancer brain metastasis, just because it's tricky.
Yeah.
And like most breast cancer brain metastasis patients are excluded from clinical trials. Did you know that, Ash?
Wow. It's interesting
dreadful.
You say that, because one of our fantastic ambassadors, Lord have mercy on her, Adele Cannon, she was approved during COVID to go to San Francisco.
Oh, yeah.
For that particular trial.
Yeah.
But her brain mets interrupted that when she had metastasis to the brain, and it was quite aggressive. So then she was ruled out as being not suitable.
She was excluded.
Yeah. And she had got her visa through the US embassy, et cetera, to travel in COVID times. So, I mean, that's devastating.
That's a dreadful,
you know,
story,
but I do. And that's the one area, you know, Laura, we lost Orla Byrne over a year ago from, again, brain metastasis. So this is something that I feel passionate about, because it is that, as you've always said, it's that last challenging piece that really is, it needs so much investment, and we need to find how we can put targeted therapies in place to prevent.
The survival times post-diagnosis are only 12 months currently. I mean, it's just staring us in the face.
Yeah.
There's difficulty with the drugs crossing the blood-brain barrier.
Mm.
And also, I think it might a little bit too be the interaction between the cancer cells in the brain and the brain tissue, because the brain tissue is so alive and so energetic, and there's all those neurofactors.
Mm.
So it's trying to come to terms with all of these challenges to make effective targeted treatment.
But do you know what I also believe, and I think, you know, you and I have had these conversations all the time, is rather than working in a silo, you know, we are a typical Irish nation where we like to do our own little bit of research, and we think our research is the best research in the world. But we are a small island. And when we look at Europe, but even when we look internationally at the States and Australia and others, if we can put the hand across the ocean and try and collaborate, our impact is so much greater.
Yeah, yeah. So very true. So very true. I'm not sure we think we're the best in Ireland. But in saying that, that's why last week was so special. And you know how much we collaborate, particularly with our US colleagues, but with Jeff Green and with Steffi and Adrian in Pittsburgh. And also with Fergus Couch, who you met last week as well. Mm. So Fergus is out of Tremor in Waterford and is now the leading oncologist in the Mayo Clinic.
Wow.
And his work particularly focuses on family history of breast cancer and risk factors.
Mm.
And he's just phenomenal. But together, we collaborated with Fergus and with Steffi and Adrian, and were able to profile 45 patients with breast cancer brain metastasis to see what things had changed and to come up with new targeted therapies.
Mm.
And we did. And that was thanks to little bit of the old Irish Boys Network, a little bit of long-term collaborations with Steffi and Adrian. Mm. But it made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, you're right, it does. It raises the bar, and it makes us think that we need to be international in our outlook and we need to play at that level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know another area that you're very passionate about is patient profiling.
Yes.
And, you know, biobanks and having them, you know, over 5, 10, 15, 20 years and knowing the history of where people are along that journey.
Yes.
And that's a key thing. And I know in recent conversations, it's one of your, I suppose, unique selling positions, is that you really are passionate about, you know, developing that and extending that.
I think for years, when we thought about breast cancer and when we thought about how to manage it, we looked at the primary tumor, and that is how the patient was treated. So no matter how long that the patient was on treatment or how far that it extended, that is how we looked at the patient on that first snapshot. And we simply now know that that's not true, that the tumor changes. It changes in relation to the types of targeted therapy it's on. It changes in relation to if it metastasizes to a different organ, its new host, and the interactions there. So we need to be cognizant of those changes. We need to act on them. But they also present new opportunities. So these are new vulnerabilities that we may be able to treat.
Mm-hmm.
So we could come up with new treatments, or we could come up with just changing the management could be super effective. And another really interesting thing about that is, and we were chatting about it before, is this whole idea of liquid biopsies.
Mm.
So we can take small blood samples, maybe a saliva sample or another sample from a patient, and that could tell us an awful lot about what's going on in their body.
Oh,
if they have cancer burden in the body and what it could be treatable with. Mm. So that's a huge, big area. But it's without these longitudinal trials without looking at the patients throughout their journey, looking at how their tumor changes, we will never be able to do this work. So with your generous support over many years, we've opened up this trial in many of our cancer centers, and we've now 4,000 patients, which we have had on our trial. And currently we've 1,700 patients active on the trial at the moment, which we're currently following. And it's been, you know, a game changer, I think, for us. And even just to even show the clinicians, look at how the patients are changing, look at their subtype switching. That we have to be aware of that, and we have to go back in and biopsy if possible, and if not, try to check other ways.
Okay. And I suppose, you know, it comes back down to it that it is so important, you know, if you have a diagnosis of breast cancer, that you talk to your team about clinical trials that you could get involved with, you know, because that's what's going to make a difference for us.
110%. And there may be a trial out there that you're suitable for. It may not be in your hospital, it may be in another hospital, but every team chats to each other, and they will hopefully be able to find a trial that's suitable for you.
So Leonie, one of the other areas that I know that during the conference you had a talk and lunch that was incorporated on Thursday in relation to lobular breast cancer. And I know some of the patient supporters that have contacted us, it's only a small handful of people, and it is quite a rare diagnosis, lobular. Can you explain a little bit about where that's going or what it is?
Absolutely, Aisling. So lobular cancer is a rare cancer amongst the estrogen receptor positive breast cancer superfamily. It looks different. It is very much more aggressive. And though it's estrogen receptor positive, it doesn't always respond well to endocrine therapy.
Okay.
Now, there's because it's rare, sometimes people find it difficult to work on because there isn't very many models. So there isn't very many ways of experimenting on it or looking for new targeted therapies within the lab. So to this end, Steffi Eastridge and Adrian Lee, who we both know well from Pittsburgh, have really devoted their lives to investigating lobular cancer. So we were really lucky that they gave a short specific symposium on lobular cancer at the meeting on Thursday. And we followed this by a patient-facing event, a lunch, where members of the public, interested people, you guys, and Steffi and Adrian came to chat about how that their research was going and some of the advances that they've made. So it was really nice, and that there was loads of chat about the importance of consideration of HRT, importance of the length of time the patients are endocrine therapy, should they be on endocrine therapy for longer if they've had a diagnosis of breast cancer, and what kind of things could they can expect maybe coming down the road.
And on the HRT aspect, I understand, you know, yes, there was a certain hesitancy. I don't know is that there anymore, but I think there was in the past over a report that was produced saying, oh, HRT, you know, can be a cause of breast cancer, which everybody's up in arms, and, you know, women of my age are kind of going, no, you can't go on HRT. But in actual fact, HRT has been a godsend for so many.
I think HRT has been a godsend for women who are hitting the menopause or then shortly in after. When you do the traditional risk factors for breast cancer, are enhanced steroids in part to play an enhanced risk? It's very tight, Aisling, and I don't think that the numbers are there to support it anymore. And I also think that HRT has changed. I think it's become much more sophisticated, and that the way that it's delivered is sophisticated. But I would like to put in a caveat that I am not an oncologist.
No, totally. I understand that. No, I understand that. But as you say, so like a HRT that my mother, you know, 30 years ago might have gone on is very different to what's available today.
Very, very different. I think that and our understanding of how HRT works and how it should be delivered. So I would encourage any woman who is worried about it or thinking about it to have a good chat with their gynecologist and their oncologist, and they would be able to advise
I'd say there's a massive sigh of relief being heard everywhere around who's listening to this podcast at the moment. And I suppose then, you know, finishing off though, when you look at advances that have been made, and in the, I'm in Breast Cancer Ireland, we set it up in 2011, but in that period of time, I have seen huge advances, down to the point that now we realise that every patient's diagnosis is very personal to them. We have tailored, you know, treatment plans for each person that's diagnosed. No longer can, you know, you put 100 people, 100 women in the room with breast cancer and you give them all chemotherapy. The rule is that only it'll only work on 10%. So the others don't have to go through the grueling chemotherapy side of things because it necessarily won't work.
Ashley, you're so right. I actually think that that's one of the major advantages is knowing when not to treat,
yeah.
Knowing when not to overtreat, being cognizant of the disease, knowing and understanding what the disease is. And there's so many really good genetic tests now that give an indication for women, particularly with early breast cancer, whether chemotherapy will be an advantage or not an advantage. Mm-hmm. Now, in saying that, there are some subtypes that do super well on chemotherapy.
Exactly.
We chatted earlier about triple negative disease. Mm. That is a super drug for a portion of those patients, mm-hmm. but it's identifying those patients,
yep.
and knowing which ones and who will most benefit from, mm-hmm. from chemotherapy. But I do think that the biggest advantage is in the sophistication of the drugs, the targeted therapy, mm-hmm. and understanding the drugs not only have to work, but they also have to be kind.
Absolutely. And I suppose you talk about triple negative, and it's an area that you and I worked on when we did our national call out for, you know, research teams who are interested in working in the area of triple negative breast cancer and looking at alternative but very effective drug therapies, mm-hmm. for patients, because these tend to be much younger women. And these tend to affect, obviously, with chemotherapy, it affects fertility, et cetera. So not only have they got to go through a diagnosis of breast cancer, before that, they've got to consider their families, you know, whether they need to freeze eggs, et cetera, yeah. Because of the brutal nature of chemotherapy on their system. And it's something that a lot of our younger ambassadors who were triple negative diagnosed, it really struck me that this is horrible. Why do they have to go through this? Surely if we invest in a fellowship and try and get some understanding of alternative ways to help treat these women. Because again, it's that personalised treatment plan.
And I know that Paul Mullen has been doing great work in Queen's in triple negative breast cancer. I think there's the complexity of triple negative breast cancer is that it's nearly a whole series of cancers in itself.
Yeah.
And it itself is now, they were saying last week, it's going to be broken down to about 10 different diseases. So I think it's understanding that. And again, so which population there will do really, really well on chemotherapy.
Mm.
Also, a lot of these patients also express the androgen receptor. And there's another lovely new target that's been worked on, particularly by Wayne Tilley in Australia. And he explained his fabulous work to us. And they are now going to clinical trial with an AOR agonist. So it's something similar to testosterone.
Okay.
But not at the levels that will cause virilization or anything like that. Just not frightening people. But that's now going to go to clinical trial, hopefully in 2023.
Yeah.
And that's really another exciting targeted therapy for this group of previously very poorly served patients.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, again, it's breaking down the problem into bite sizes, really trying to understand the biology and really trying to understand what would make a good drug.
Well, Leonie, as always, it's inspiring having the conversation with you. I don't think we talk enough about the amazing research that is being done in the country and what you're doing collaboratively, but also, you know, research in a general sense. There's lots and lots being done that's really, really positive. I think everybody just looks for the cure. And unfortunately, in a breast cancer world, because there are a lot of permutations of breast cancer, the one cure is not going to fit all. But we are getting to a point where we are certainly changing positively the landscape going forward.
Oh, Ashley, without a doubt. And I think it's all about understanding the disease, understanding your patient, understanding your patient's needs and wishes, mm-hmm. to make better treatments, to make better management strategies. And on a personal note, I would just like to say huge thanks to Breast Cancer Ireland, because I know that our lab wouldn't exist without you guys. And also, we wouldn't understand the patients as well as we do without your lovely breast cancer ambassadors, without your understanding. And I think that we've had a great journey together over such a long time.
And it's very true. I mean, the amount of people who initially I was a bit nervous to bring sort of, if I call them lay people, into a research environment like a lab and have somebody walk them through, you know, what you do on a daily basis, because I kind of thought that might be just over my head, let alone their heads. But it actually proved to be the complete opposite. They were fascinated by how you showed them under microscope, etc., various different, you know, research that you're working on, and your lab team were so accommodating. And I remember one guy saying to a family that we brought through, you know, it's amazing. Now I can put a face to the name, to the cell that I'm looking underneath the microscope at, that I know this is ultimately going to help your, yeah, you know, person in your family or whatever. And I think that's really powerful.
Oh, 110%. The communication goes both ways. And I think the passion and the interest goes both ways. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Well, Leonie, thank you so much for joining us today. I think it's been insightful. I hope our listeners have taken on board the fantastic research advances that are being made and more to come in the future. So thanks a million for being with us on More Than a Lump podcast.
Thank you so much, Aisling.
The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.